Hey everybody, Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols here with another Tactical Fitness Report. And today we're going to talk about periodization and a real quick definition. And believe it or not, you're probably already doing it, even if you've never heard of that word before. You know, whether you are doing a cycle of cardio, a cycle of calisthenics, cycle of strength training, hypertrophy, whatever you're deciding to really focus on, a particular period of time, you know, you are basically scheduling your workout, you know, throughout, you know, the year in certain blocks. And that is what periodization is. So that's kind of a basic definition, Jeff. Any other analogies or better definitions?
Yeah, like that's like from the 30,000 foot view. Don't think that it gets any really, really more complex than that. The training, like just understand that the complexity of training doesn't change through that period of time. We're talking dosing. That's what periodization is referring to. It's not like you're going to go from one modality completely to a different. We're talking kind of energy systems here.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do is the reason why we do periodization. So for a period of time, you stress out an energy system to create an adaptation. But so just keep this in mind. We've said, like, you know, there's linear periodization, like as an example, there's undulating. We're going to go through these, but just keep in mind that there's different forms of periodization based on the desired outcome and the person's need. So my point of all this is that any stimulus that is too long, that goes on for lots of jets, too many days in a row, right? That's where we run into problem with periodization. Like there's, you know, short time, and that's always what periodization is, well, how long should this period, should I train it for? How many weeks? How many, and each one has a kind of a different length to it. So that's kind of that's what we're gonna talk to. We're gonna talk about, you know, here's kind of the skeleton of periodization. And we're not gonna get too much in the weeds, but just give you guys an idea of, so that way, after this conversation, hopefully you can look back at your own programs and go, oh, I was kind of doing some periodization. And basically Stu and Jeff were just recommending when I take breaks in those periods.
Yeah.
That is really kind of that's where the coach's eye and the coach's experience comes in, is like, it's our job to have you take these purposeful pauses in your stimulus to further enhance your adaptation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and especially, you know, when you're talking about an athlete in sports, it's completely different when we're talking about a tactical athlete, and I'll explain why. Because, you know, when you're a football player, right, in the summer you are doing some general fitness training, maybe, you know, preseason, working on strength, power, speed, agility, you know, all the little elements of fitness that you need for football. And then you go into the school season starts and you're still in preseason, but you're practicing. So it's a little more specific now. So you've gone into a specific training mode. And then the next one is competition. So now you're in games, you're in season. Training changes completely. You know, when you're in that, it's more maintaining fitness levels, nursing aches and pains and bumps and bruises and stuff like that. So that is part of your training program. And then there's the transition part of it when the season's over and you're either going into a new sport or you're just in the off season waiting for football to start again several months later. So that is a form of athletic periodization when you have a season or, you know, a competition season, you know, when you're not necessarily in athletics anymore and now you're in a job that there is no off season. Now you may have a busier season than others, like, you know, obviously summers in California, if you're a wildland firefighter, right now you're really busy. You know, so there are ways to, you know, manipulate your training programs to prepare for that kind of stress that you know is coming. Deployment cycle, same thing. But yeah, in a tactical sense, you know, it's really hard to get good at all the elements of fitness together. You know, there are some ways, you know, as a tactical athlete to maintain them all together maybe a form of more of a conjugate style of periodization. But when you're in that process of getting to and through the training, you got to really focus on elements that go well together. So like the football, strength, power, speed, agility, you know, those work really well together, but cardiovascular endurance and muscle stamina, not so much, especially when you're trying to do one rep maxes and things like that. And the way I try to explain it sometimes to people, when I say, look, you're a great football player. Now imagine if your football game started with a 3 mile run and it ended with a 3 mile ruck.
Yep.
How would your training look for that? So.
Exactly. And that's the thing is we want to understand something is when a coach, this is my opinion, it's a strong one, but whenever a coach refers to a sport in relation to like our context, we use that sport as a reference. Like, cause people have this, a lot of people that come through the pipeline of special forces have a lot of familiarity with sport, right? So when Stu and I make a lot of reference to sport, it's just, it's only to show that correlation that the physiological development that happens in sport that's very easily monitored, right? And that's what sports is. It's constant monitoring of your output, constant monitoring. Or the tactical population, that's what we're trying to get you guys to do, which is why Stu and I say, pick a good timeline in which to train within to get that adaptation, right? Make a reasonable timeline. That's like the first thing. So that goes right in this. It's like, okay, because if you have the appropriate timeline, you pick the appropriate program, you know, segments and, you know, this periodization segments, pretty much everyone soon I can get prepared. I mean, that's the idea. If why are we talking periodization? Because if it was just as simple as just constantly, linearly, incrementally loading distance, duration, and reps and weight, you and I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
It would just be do more running, do more swimming, do more of this. But that's what the periodization does. It breaks up the push-up into what it is. It's a three-phase movement, right? It's concentric, it's eccentric, it's isometric, just like everything else. And that's also what these periods do. They basically dissect the movements, right? So you can, like, it's like I would kind of put it like NASCAR. At the end of the race, they completely disassemble the engine, right? To look at what's been worn out, what needs to be replaced. They might replace one little piece of that, just like we dissect the swim stroke. We fix one little part of that stroke. We reassemble the stroke in the pool. All of a sudden, the stroke gets better. Right, we reassemble that engine, and that's what periodization is. It's this constant sort of disassembling and reassembling of movement at the appropriate speed. And so Stu kind of mentioned conjugate. Conjugate's the best form for performance. The problem is that it really takes a trained eye and notes and or notes to work through a conjugate without. And it's weird because, like, last piece is even the bodybuilding world. Like, you see a really world-class bodybuilder. A lot of times that bodybuilder doesn't write their own program at that level. A lot of times they're in part of it. But you can see how so many of you guys get your head in the weeds, and it's hard to kind of figure this stuff out. Like, oh, how am I going too long? Well, if I push this to 6 weeks instead of 5 weeks, is it going to be a better? Well, no, sometimes it's not. And that's where the conjugate comes in. But anyways, just keep that in mind. It's about duration.
Yeah. So, you know, let's just talk about some of the forms. You know, there is a traditional periodization form, probably the first form of periodization that was out there. They call it traditional, and it's really based on, you know, a strength, little bit of endurance combination. You know, whenever you're building an athlete, and it starts off at a high volume, low intensity. Right. And then towards the end of your cycle, you've kind of progressed into a lower volume, higher intensity. Right. So that's just a way to do it. It's not the way to do it. It's just a way to do it. And it really kind of depends on your strengths and weaknesses. Do you need to do that? So whether that is a, you know, high volume, you know, repetitions, you know, when you're, you know, lighter weight and then building up to, you know, heavier weight, right? Or what's a good way to explain that. That's really what that traditional periodization model is for. Like I said, all these models are really for the athletes, and depending on their strengths and weaknesses, one of these is more applicable to that athlete than the other.
Let's do this. Let's define the athlete a little bit. So like when you say traditional, for me, I'm looking at like, okay, where did that fall? There's an athlete that I worked with a little while back, a couple years ago, that was a track athlete for Virginia Tech. Linear programming was traditional, was very good for him, right? Because sure. He's a great runner. We need not only build eventual strength, but he needs to build the strength endurance of his upper body and lower limbs, which he didn't have. He had a lot of aerobic endurance. So starting off with a little higher volume, low intensity, so he can build that foundation. And then you're like we've talked about before, it's a lot easier to take a good runner and build strength than to take a big heavy dude, drop the weight and maintain strength. Yeah. So that sort of traditional periodization in so many words will work really good for both. But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, we got this track athlete that's got a good aerobic base. They're really going to do well in that traditional periodization model.
That's a good point, because you know, the way I typically take those guys is we build a foundation of calisthenics first, which is higher volume. And then we progress into a lifting cycle where we focus on hypertrophy and then get into some of the strength-based training shortly after that. And those are short blocks. Those don't necessarily have to be long 12-week cycles like in my, you know, seasonal tactical fitness. You know, I have four 12-week cycles. But within those 12-week cycles, there's little things that we insert depending on the athlete's needs. You know, like this particular athlete, I'm going to say, let's go 4 to 6 weeks with some calisthenics base, but then we're going to do a little hypertrophy cycle right here. You know, you don't need to run 40 miles a week like you were doing when you were in track season. Let's pull that back a lot. And then just, you know, let's build some strength on you, you know, by building some muscle and do that. So that is how you kind of manipulate traditional periodization cycles by using a block periodization model to just insert that in there. So all of these are kind of interchangeable, and you know, once you learn about the different models that are out there, you can see how to apply that to you when you need it, right? Yep. And especially if you're not seeing any more gains in calisthenics, you know, time to make a change. Let's add some weight. Maybe start off with a weight vest, right? Decrease your reps a little bit. Maybe then start off with dumbbells. Decrease your reps a little more. Maybe start off with, you know, next week, you know, advance to barbells, you know, and just journey in through that, you know, that strength training cycle. And, you know, towards the end of a 12, maybe 16 weeks, you've really transformed this track athlete into someone who actually has some strength and muscle stamina that he hadn't had before. And that, it's usually takes about that long too.
Right.
You know, which is relatively short. If you think about, you know, what this person's coming in doing, just coming with a running background, and then he's crushing PSTs 6 weeks later.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing too, is, we're given these examples. The one thing that's worth caution about all this is pretty straightforward, is that, you know, Stu and I are saying, you know, we're changing the stimulus to create that adaptation. We got to keep in mind that we have to at least let that stimulus happen for a while, a week or two, a couple weeks. And this is why, because if we're changing the stimulus too frequently, also your body may not have enough stimulus in that energy system, or whatever you want to call it, to actually create adaptation. You create a little more nervous system stress. So so I guess the caveat to say is, like, this, you're not changing your periodization weekly. Like, that's also what I'm saying, right? To get a neurological adaptation, you're looking at about 6 weeks for your average person. But to start getting a cellular change and certain other things, you're really only talking about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So my point is, minimum 3 weeks. And that's really, really rare that I would change a stimulus on someone after 3 weeks, except for like in a peaking phase or a taper phase, or they're, you know, want to do a quick sort of power and speed sort of nervous system dump. But typically speaking, it's about 6 weeks before we make change, you know, between 3 and 6 weeks for each one of these. Because that's the other thing too, is we actually do want to stress you guys out a little bit to force adaptation. And if we take the stimulus away, you may not get the adaptation if you take it away too quick. So keep that in mind too.
That's a good point. You know, another thing is about the only time I've really changed people's training within 3 weeks was when they just needed a deload.
Yep, exactly. Right. When you shut them down, yep.
Yeah, you just shut it down. So, you know what? We're going to chill out for just a week and then come back and reassess. And, you know, maybe we'll change gears, you know, when you come back. But, you know, sometimes you can see in 3 weeks that either they haven't adapted quite yet or they're just so burned out that, you know, after they work out with you, they're also working a manual labor job.
You know,
they're working a night shift somewhere. So they're just really not able to recover naturally. So then all of those situations will affect how you make those training changes in these blocks. So I know I'm kind of getting into like a bunch of what ifs here, but you can see where it becomes very difficult when you are making your own training program. Right. Or even if you're following one of mine or one of Jeff's, you know, these things aren't personalized training programs. So you may have to personalize it depending on where you are.
Yes.
If you're seeing growth, if you're seeing negative growth, you know, you need to make adjustments, you know, and, you know, it's just ask, you know, you can just ask, what do you think I need to deload here? Because here's what's happening. All my numbers are going, I'm slower and I'm getting weaker. Yes.
Yeah.
You probably need to deload.
Yeah, that just happened to one of our clients that we've had. I've had him in person a couple times. You know, he was basically working on finishing school. He was also finishing his union apprenticeship as a pipe fitter in New York. And he was doing my training programs. So his pipe fitting was basically on like the Brooklyn Bridge on the high rises in that heat all summer, wearing the Nomex clothing. Sweating, he was like, I was losing, you know, 6-7 pounds a day in water weight, trying to replenish that. I can't get this. And we finally was like, you know, throughout his apprenticeship, he was able to save money. So he's like, he's shutting everything down. He doesn't have to work now because he finished his apprenticeship and he saved up a bunch of money. And he's like, I'm just devoting to training for 6 months.
Nice.
Because life was happening, you know, training. You know, almost it had to by proxy take like a second seat because like, well, I got to get through this apprenticeship. Otherwise I'm not, you know, not even going to be able to get through it.
Yeah.
So that's the thing too, is a lot of times we're talking timeline, you know, and that's what we're trying to get people to understand that we know everyone's excited about creating these adaptations. And we're also excited because we know it can be done if given the right timeline for you all. So that's one of the big important things, because if we get the right timeline, these questions can be very, these questions you guys about to have about timing or programming, they can be laid out pretty fundamentally so you can understand them. And that's what we're trying to get you to do. If you guys don't go see a recruiter until you're killing the PST, you know, you pick a good timeline, right, based on your needs, and you follow programming, whether it's mine or Stu's, piece by piece. What you're going to finding at the end of the training is you're going to feel great, right? You're going to be prepared for not only the PST, but you're going to be prepared for whatever selection course you're ready for. Because again, it's like timing, like it's like dating. It's a weird thing. It's like, you might meet someone awesome, but you know, timing's a mess.
Yeah.
That's all this is like picking the right programming, giving the right timing. And now you'll see this right progress.
All right. So we talked about the traditional periodization model, right, where you go high volume, low intensity, you know, transition into lower volume, higher intensity. Now let's talk about some of the non-traditional models, and I guess we can talk about reverse periodization, which is just the reverse of what we just talked about.
Yep.
For endurance athletes. So if you're more of the strength guy, and now you are, you know, trying to build up a little more endurance. If you take a look at the way this is set up, you know, they tend to set it up with a lower volume, high intensity, right? Think about what we're doing there. Low in volume, high intensity, going into a higher volume, lower intensity. So you build up with short, fast runs, Right. And you kind of ramp it up into a higher volume, you know, progression, higher volume, you know, longer distance runs, a little bit less intensity, you know. So, you know, it depends on what your goals are for that. Sure. You know, it doesn't, you know, for a mile and a half run, you know, the volume increases aren't going to be that significant. Right. But if you're trying to run a marathon, volume increases are going to be greater, much greater. Yep. So, but anyway, I've always liked the reverse periodization model, and what I've tried to do with mine, programming, is kind of have, you know, the traditional and reverse models kind of put together. And instead of creating a linear process in that, it creates more of a bell curve throughout the cycle, you know, depending on what you're doing. So you kind of progress up and then you start coming down, you know, with your distances, but you're increasing your speed. You know, you can flip it back and forth and increase your speed, but and decrease your distances, you know, however you want to call it. But that's one of many ways that I have used the reverse periodization model, is to just, you know, build a foundation of running technique. You know, it's real easy to work on people's technique when they're doing sprints right in front of you, because if they're not doing that right, there you can just see the wheels starting to fall off. And then you can transition, you know, into longer distance running and building that volume up logically.
Yeah, and that, like, you know, if I was going to grab your stereotypical athlete and then plug them into that, it'd be more of like your strength guy, like your football lineman that wants to go. Like, that's what I'm looking at. It's like, you know, they should have some inherent strength that we're going to convert, right, into more of a strength endurance module. And that's what you see. You see a guy that's like, well, man, this guy can bench press, you know, 350 pounds, but he can't do 65 push-ups. That's what you're seeing why you do a reverse split. It's like, we know they have the foundation of absolute strength, but what they don't have is the ability to express strength endurance, because the sport they played isn't about strength endurance. Football is not a strength endurance sport, right? The numbers and the speed and all that dictate that. So you get an athlete that is inherently, like, strong for a couple reps, and then they don't have the endurance.
Yep.
Well, what you can do is you take that athlete and do exactly what Stu is saying, create that high intensity, low volume, and it switches it over time because they're already used to that. They should be, from collegiate athletics, used to high intensity, low volume. But Bud's is completely the opposite of that. It's high volume, low intensity.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a strength endurance. So it's barely even aerobic at some point. So That's the difficulty now you see, is like, why is it difficult for a track athlete to be good at Buds? Now you see why it's really good, really hard for a strong person that doesn't have endurance. You see this converging. And so what Stu and I are trying to get you guys to do is we're trying to get the meet in the middle at the decathlete.
Yeah.
Right? We're bringing the football player into the decathlete. We're bringing the track player up to the decathlete level. You know, and that's really what we're trying to do. And given the right timeline, again, now we see, because that conversion takes some time, whether you're big and strong or you're lean and super fast.
Yeah. You know what? One thing I like about your running program, you know, how you really focus on the 300 meter distance, because that 300 meter distance is so hard for a football player athlete to go hardcore.
Yep.
But if you're a longer distance runner, you know, who's used to running slow, you know, that addition of speed is really important for you as well. So depending on the athlete, you're going to increase speed of one and you're going to increase the endurance of the other.
Yep.
Just by doing a 300-yard sprint.
Yep. It's the one event where you can take, like, if you took your offensive skill players, your wide receivers, your tight ends, you put them on the same side, like same sort of like running event as you would like your defensive linemen, defensive tackles, defensive ends. What you start seeing is, and then you put those strength athletes, those skill athletes, those line, those defensive ends, those defensive safeties, and you put those on the same running 300 as a cross country athlete. You're going to see two things happen. You're going to see the cross-country athlete have a real hard time stopping at the ends and changing direction. But you'll see the football players do it very well. But you'll see the track athletes run that distance very quickly, but you'll see the football athletes really taper. You'll see a complete opposite, a dichotomy.
Yeah.
Why? Because you see the expression of their sport play out in this 200, 300 meter interval where some can run, but some can't slow down. Right? That's what the problem with the track athlete is they don't slow down well, but they can maintain forever. But that's the problem with the football players. They don't maintain very well, but they can stop and go, stop and go, stop and go. And so you put them in a 300, you're on the equal playing field now because yeah. The distance is long enough to get into that aerobic, that anaerobic debt that football players never quite get into.
Right.
And then track athletes never quite get that fast, except exactly. For at the very end of their event.
Sure.
So you it really creates an interesting sort of, hey, we're all on the equal playing field here.
Well, I tell you, you know, when you see guys screw that up, you know, where I've seen many people screw it up is they just get really good at distance running. You know, you might run 50 miles a week, but you're just really good at slow running. So even if you were to drop it to a 4-mile run, which you're going to do every week at Bud's, you may still not be within the standard of Bud's running pace, you know, which, you know, between 7 and 8 minute mile is where you need to be. But if you're running, you know, 10 miles a day at 9 minute pace, you just got good at running slow. You know, you're not good at running fast. So that is, once again, you really need to get specific into your training and understand, you know, what your competition, what your game face is going to have to require.
Yep. Because if you take, here's the why. There's a little kind of, if you guys want to play a little game, here's a little game. Right? It's a hypothetical game, but it's a real game you can play. You get your track athlete, right? Your cross-country athlete, and you have them stand next to, basically, hypothetically, of course, their wide receiver, defensive back, whatever it is. And you're going to run a mile, but you're going to run 100 meters and back and forth 16 times. So let's get the hypothetical. You have the track athlete run his mile. They run that mile in 5.5 minutes, we'll call it, right? The full hair runs it in 8. Okay, now you go back and forth. That 5-minute mile just turned into an 8 for the track athlete. But, and it's, you're going to see this 2 or 3 minute increase in time. You won't see that 2 and 3 increase in minute and time for the football player because it can change direction much quicker. So now, granted, they will be ultimately running slower, yes, but the difference in time between those 2 mile loops, between the two athletes and then back and forth for the mile athletes, the difference will be much greater for the track athlete than it will be for the athlete that stops and goes. So we start seeing, so as a coach, I look at it, what does that mean, Jeff? We got it here. What does that mean? All it's doing is it's showing you what you've been exposed to as an athlete. So you're going to see an athlete that's predisposed to be able to obviously run greater distances. One's going to be able to lift more, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, when you train properly, after about 6 weeks, both those athletes will converge to that decathlete line. And then you'll see it all. You'll see that they have tremendous endurance and strength. You go, where'd this come from? Well, it came from not just relying on one energy system, being the track guy, like the guy that keeps going, like, yeah, Stu, you know, I can't get my pull-ups up, but I want to run that sub 5.5 minute mile and a half. They're like, well, no, like run an 8 minute. Now, you know, it's like, what more lower do you want to get? Because the more you get, the stronger you get, the slower you're going to be, right? The more endurance you have, the weaker you're going to be. So where are we going to, that's what we keep saying is like, this programming, guys, is not to make you the best runner or the best football player. It's to make you the most physically capable to handle all of those.
Yes.
That's what we're trying to do. It's not about like, well, I gleaned this from the football world or this from the powerlifting world. We're just going to – no. We're gleaning from every aspect of sport we can, trying to reassemble it, like I mentioned, in our programming to get you guys to have the best possible strength, the best possible endurance, the best possible everything for the community you're going to go into, because it's not a sport.
Sure. Sure. Okay. So let's do this. Let's talk about some more non-traditional periodizations. And we've mentioned them already. We talked about an undulating periodization plan and then block periodization.
Yeah.
But you know, undulating, you know, is a varying increase, decrease of volume and intensity. So you notice we've been talking about high volume, low intensity, low volume, high intensity, you know, all these other things, but undulating just means that it's just, you know, it's a varying degree of volume changes or intensity changes. So for instance, you know, a 5-3-1 lift cycle in a week, you know, you do 5 reps one day, do 3 reps another day, 1 rep another day. And, you know, you're increasing the, you know, intensity, or I guess, yeah, the weight and intensity from maybe 70 to 85 to 95% of your 1 rep max. So that is a undulating phase that's spread out over a course of a week. You know, it's up to you how long you want to, you know, go through that cycle of, you know, similar style workouts. But it's amazing when you see a 1 rep max and a 50% 1 rep max, and then you see a 75% 1 rep max, and you see a 90% 1 rep max. Those are three different workouts right there. Yep. It may all say bench press on it, but those are three different workouts, three different energy systems that you are going to be crushing, you know, just by those little different, I guess, different percentages, and that is undulating. So anyway, that's how I understand undulating, and I tend to apply it solely to powerlifting, but there may be other uses for it that Jeff has.
Yeah, so the difficulty with it doing, like, because my programming is all block undulating. It can be designed that way, or it can just be done block. So, but the problem, like I said, with undulating periodization is that you are in part, well, you can, like, if you're, especially if I was training an Olympic weightlifting athlete, like, where it's, you're constantly working off those 1RMs, like, you're checking your speed constantly, that is going to constantly undulate it on purpose, because I each day I'm going to find out what their current state of readiness is. I'm going to test that. I'm actually going to test that through movements. I might use electronics to test that. And I'm going to start basing my stimulus on their ability to receive it.
Yep.
So that's like the real finite, like, high performance, working in like the UFC, working in Olympic training, like, where I'm actually working with athletes on a daily basis. And that's what, like, come November, December, I'll be doing that with the candidates here. I'll be doing a daily tweak of their undulating block periodization model one-on-one. But then you find out there's different, you can group them a little bit differently. My point is unless you're actually observing them on a daily basis, like Stu does, is like, you get to know your athlete and you go, hey, throttle up today. Things aren't right with you. Like, your movement pattern's not great. You find out maybe they haven't slept well, they haven't been eating right. So you throttle back with them. And that is where the undulating model really works great, is when you have a coach in there pushing and pulling. Like, nope, go up today, bring it down today. Go up today, you're moving great. Let's see what stimulus we got. And you record that.
Yep.
So that's the thing with the undulating side, is you don't just go, yeah, lift more today, lift less today. This is a very conscious decision to annotate that in your notes, so that way it can be a point of evaluation for later, whether it's a day or 3 or 5 or 7 days later, you're going to use that. Because what we're trying to do is get, is the reality of undulating block periodization is this: you're trying to stress the organism out as much as possible. Like, you're really like playing with fire. You're like, okay, I'm going to push real hard. And when you realize, you see these markers of stress show up, you as a coach pull back.
Yes.
That's the undulation, right? Yeah. It might be increased intensity, might be less intensity, might be more volume, might be less rest period, might be high. There's a couple variables you're going to change around in an undulating model, but you have to be present. So that's the point of it. If you're going to run a conjugate, here's the deal. If someone says they've written you a conjugate plan and they're not checking you on a daily basis, they didn't write you a conjugate plan. Right. Because your daily numbers, your weekly numbers, your every day of stimulus matters, because your programming is based on that state of readiness. So everyone's like, oh, yeah, mine is in a block undulating format. But that's where you have to choose as an individual what your percentages are going to be, if they're going to be high today or they're going to be low today, right? Are you going to stop your training because you recognize you're overtrained? You slide those blocks to the right, and it becomes a 3 or 4 day deload, right? Yep. And that's where we give advice. And Stu's doing that anyway. Like, whether you guys like it or not, you're emailing Stu, especially if you've been in correspondence with Stu for a while, or if you've been following his programs for a while. When he starts giving you advice, do this, change this, feel this, all he's doing is he's turning your traditional, we'll call it starting point, sort of traditional and non-traditional linear model, and it eventually becomes a conjugate if you've done it long enough. If you're paying attention and you're changing your stimulus because you're like, well, I'm not really feeling this calisthenics phase. It's just not. So I need to change my stimulus. You've just become an undulating participant then.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the biggest things that you mentioned there that is really important is, yeah, you go from, you know, 70, 85, 95%, but the deload is so important.
It's crucial.
In this phase. So you will see more non-traditional, you know, rest weeks, you know, in this, or maybe you just shift gears altogether, you know? So if you're still in the tactical athlete world, so maybe you lay off the heavy weights for a while and you go into, you know, some more cardio-based, non-impact cardio-based, you know, for the following week to kind of you know, help your body recover a little bit easier from, you know, some of those lifts. You know, that you just need a break from, you know.
And that's where the term comes from. So the term super compensation comes from undulating block periodization models. So and then what Stu is explaining is super, super valuable for you guys to hear. I want you guys to imagine, like I imagine this is like a golf cart, your electric golf cart going up a hill. At some point, electric golf cart wants to go, like, imagine that the moment before your golf cart runs out of juice, you're able to get to the top of that hill and go down. That's what undulating block periodization is. You're trying to like just stress it out to the last spot and then like, oh, I can't do it anymore. And you just take away the volume and the stress. And then what happens is you're able to super compensate. And that's what you stress the organism as much as you can, it's like the moment before a water balloon's gonna burst. And then you let water out so the membrane can relax and heal. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to stress you out, get you to heal. Stress you out, get you to heal. Mm-hmm. And the closer as a coach we're programming to that becomes a conjugate.
Yes.
Because otherwise the programming is like, okay, 5 weeks, change stimulus. 8 weeks, change stimulus. And what we're trying to do is each day stress you out really as much as we can in the energy system and then go, whoop, take it away. Take the stimulus away. And the body's like the next day, like this stimulus come and it's all charged up, but the stimulus has been pulled back. So you get the enzyme, the hormone release from the previous trauma because that's from the rate coding side of your nervous system going, oh my God, this stimulus is coming. Because you've been training super hard for days and weeks. And all of a sudden that warm-up comes, you start yawning, you're like, oh my God, here comes the workout. Two-thirds of that volume gets pulled away, but the stimulus is there. You go home, your body's like, oh my God, heal, heal, heal. You get super compensation from undulating block periodization.
Yeah.
But that takes a little bit of an eye, and that's what Stu's giving you guys advice, going, do this, change this. No, you've reached the limit of that stimulus. Go do this program instead. That's all he's doing is saying he's planning. He's giving you guys a block periodization model that's undulating as you guys progress.
Yep. And that's so what anyway, we do. In a tactical world, you know, 20 years ago, I realized that I was not training properly. You know, I was kind of just good, staying good at everything, trying to get great at some things. And, you know, by 30, I was really near broken. And when I say that, I say that as, you know, as a kid who started lifting weights at 13, playing sports earlier than that, you know, playing contact sports in high school, contact sports in college. And, you know, then I started preparing for special ops, make it through BUDS, you know, did 8 years as a SEAL. You know, by 30, I was really falling apart. You know, and I realized I needed to change something. So what I did was I went back to my old thing that I started with the very first was kind of a bodybuilding style hypertrophy program because I hadn't done it in a while. And I was like, you know what? I need to just take a break and just kind of not run. That was probably the biggest help right there was just not run 25, 35 miles a week. So just shut it down. It was all non-impact cardio and lifting. And that 12-week cycle changed everything. I felt better.
You healed that, didn't you?
I healed up, you know, and I wasn't completely broken where I was, you know, just nagging injuries. You know, one needed a surgery, but the others were just kind of nagging that needed time to heal. But I wasn't giving them time to heal, right? And then when spring came around, I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready to run. But I did it smarter than I did previous years. I didn't just jump right into 25 miles a week. I progressed, you know, with 5 miles a week, 6 miles a week, 7 miles a week. And, you know, through the summer, I was back into my running phase. And then I was like, you know what? I don't want the wheels to fall off this year, right? So I'm going to start coming back down with my volume on the running. So in the fall, started coming down instead of high reps in the calisthenics, started adding weights again. And then it just kind of rotated into this, you know, spring, summer, calisthenics, cardio, running progression that goes into the fall, winter, deload of running, but deload of calisthenics, but increase of lifting and fewer repetitions, working on strength. So what that enabled me to do was work on things I needed to work on, endurance and muscle stamina. And then during the fall and winter, it was a mix of everything. Kind of a, when I say mix of everything, it was strength, power, speed, and agility. But I maintained some endurance by just doing non-impact stuff, biking and swimming. And then through the years, this seasonal tactical fitness periodization model has just kind of evolved into a mix of just everything that we just talked about by, you know, instead of a 12-week cycle, which is what summer is, you know, all these little, you know, four blocks or 12 to 13 week cycles, you know, it's hard to run that, you know, kind of volume for that long. Yep. I mean, people do it all the time if you're just running, but if you're also doing calisthenics and you're mixing in some supplemental weight training just to maintain some of the strength from, you know, your fall winter cycle, you know, now you're talking about, you know, stresses on the body that, you know, you have to be very gentle, you know, when you are doing that. So that is where the block comes in there. You know, we'll take, you know, I've had runners that are in their peak of their running. I'm like, let's stop running for the next 2 weeks. We're just going to do non-impact cardio. We're going to get in the weight room. Yep. And, you know, I'd throw a fall winter week right into the middle of the summer.
You betcha. Yeah.
You know, cause they were just done. You know, you could just see it.
You know, yeah. So. Those are the sort of conversations you got to have with yourself. And that's why we're doing this particular episode is like, you know, not everyone is going to have the depth of understanding experience or even really the desire like Stu and I do to understand these things. We understand that. So, but just ultimately the people that are going to put in the week in and week out and weight training or running and pool, the combination of all of them, we just want you to be aware of that changing those stimuluses every couple of months to take a different priority. And that's what we're doing. Like the priority shifts, you have three energy systems and they've got to shift, you know, even aerobic, think of like running, long distance swimming, like the heavy breathing, that's an energy system, right? So a third of your year, that might be the focal point is developing now, right? The other third is right. Healing tissue, growing tissue, hypertrophy. Think of moderate weight, lots and lots of distance, right? Healing the tissue, practicing movement patterns. That's where we gain mobility actually in the hypertrophy phase, right? When we are stretching and elongating tissue and healing tissue, that's what mobility is. That's the hypertrophy side, right? And then we have the other side where it's quick and powerful, quick and powerful, quick and power, long rests. So that's what sport is, right? Yeah. A dynamic, explosive sport, that high skill side, you like the snatch, the clean, the minutiae of things, the sprinting, the mechanics of it, that should be a focal point of a third of your year. Not just it, but that's the that's the priority of his focus. So that's what Stu is saying. Like, yeah, they're still running and swimming, but they're gonna definitely still do calisthenics in a couple of days of weight training as a tertiary and secondary focal point to maintain that stimulus, not get rid of it.
Right.
Still there. So just keep that in mind. You're just, everything's in thirding. Like, whoop, just reappropriate those thirds. throughout the year. It's like juggling. Here you go. Yep.
That's what you're doing. It is like juggling three balls.
What it is. For 3 or 4 months of the year, you kind of focus on one. That's what I'm saying. 3 or 4 months, right? Or it might even, some might even be 2.5 months. Especially if you don't need to focus, you're the cross country athlete that doesn't need to focus on 3.5, 4 months of more running.
No, that's the last thing.
Maybe it's like, oh well, I don't need aerobic, but I'm not a great swimmer, so I'm going to put my aerobic work ethic and my aerobic emphasis of time in the pool instead of the track. Now, right there you go. There's your, you get your aerobic side, but then you get your skill acquisition side too.
Yep. Love it.
That's it. That's periodization.
I think that is periodization. I think we talked through periodization. There's a lot of cool models out there too. Now, one last thing, Cal Dietz, he has a triphasic system.
Yep. So his is, again, it's based off the three energy systems, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Really cool model. So like I said, if you Google all these little terms that we put in there, and I'll write these down in the description below, but make sure you do a little research and just understand where they came from, because they're nothing new. You know, the term periodization, I mean, we're talking stuff well before the 60s.
Yeah, Usarin, and I forget who developed it's Usarin and Foot, what was his name? Russian dude.
Yeah, Medvedev and
not Milanichev. Yeah, but it
Bompa.
Is.
Bompa? B-O-M-P-A, Bompa?
Yeah.
Tudor Bompa? It's like,
I have a couple of their books, but yeah. Anyways, but take a look at it, because then, like, you know, you start seeing origins. You start going, oh, okay. Most of them are gleaned from sport, right? So the triphasic model is birthed from the French contrast model, which is where my stuff comes from a lot of. And that's where I look at triphasic and go, oh yeah, totally. Like it's brilliant. It's brilliant stuff. It's so good. It's refinement. Like, have they reinvented the wheel from French contrast? No, they've just made it out of better rubber.
Okay.
The French contrast is really good. It's just now we have the techniques and the understandings to get more in that minutia. And that's why I think Cal's and Ben Pedersen stuff is so good.
Yep. I had to mention those guys because they have a great model as well. Hey, how about a product placement? Our sponsor. We don't really have a sponsor.
There you go. Yeah.
We don't really have a sponsor, but Sonora Honey.
Yes.
Really damn good. This is some good stuff. I mean, if it wasn't all sugar, I would eat this all the time.
All the time. Yeah. Oh God, I don't even like honey.
Yeah, orange blossom. Honey?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah, my whole family loves it. I buy this by like 6-7 jars at a time.
Yeah. You know, and for my son.
Yeah. You gotta go to Sonoran
Honey. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
Shout
out to Sal.
Yeah. I don't even think he has a website. You gotta find him on Instagram.
Did he get the website up yet?
I don't know if he did, but I was Venmoing him money to send me honey. So
Yes, he could. Yes.
He's legit.
That's the best pre-workout too, like. So good.
Yeah. You know what I've been doing? Here's another product placement. The Sonoran Honey with some frog fuel.
There you go. The collagen is not. Is
yeah.
It not?
Yeah. Yeah. Collagen based.
You bet.
Protein.
Boom.
So there you go. A little product placement. They didn't pay us for that, but I thought of...
But it's good stuff.
Yeah. It's all good stuff. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Look up the books and stuff like that. I mean, anything deeper than that, really, like we go any deeper than that, we're teaching at that point. So just basic level stuff. You don't have to get too much in the weeds. That's what we're here for.
There's some good articles that actually explains several models that are available to coaches and athletes. So you can find it. Minimal research. Just don't say it in your text, because when I texted Jeff to go, hey Jeff, let's do one on periodization, it came out as dot is Asian. So Siri doesn't know what it is. It comes out as a red line underneath it when you write it in Word. Most people do not know what periodization is. When I do conferences and I say, hey, who's heard of periodization? Almost nobody's ever heard of it.
Yeah.
But everybody's done it.
It's the model. Like, it's all strength and conditioning. Every strength conditioning coach in the world that has an athlete competing at a high level is working off a periodization model. Like, every every Olympic athlete is working off a periodization model based on their year sport and their state of readiness. Everyone, every single one.
Yep.
So this is not like a thing that we're making up. This is, if you really want to get in the minutia of sport, you got to do it that way.
Yeah. And even people who say they don't periodize, they are doing some form of periodization. I guarantee
they just may be doing it too long or too short, but anything is a period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, even if it's indefinite, it's right. Yeah. The last 7 years.
You're just on a really long cardio cycle.
Real long period of time. So yeah. Anyways, yeah, that's periodization.
All right, cool, Jeff. Hey, man, thanks again for doing this. I'll share everything. Like I said, if you're looking for Jeff's programming, it's at performancefirstus.com. Mine is stewsmithfitness.com. Check them both out. Do one, do the other, do both.
They're all going to get you to the same place.
All going to get you to the same place eventually. So if you give yourself enough time.
Yes.
So make yourself a good candidate and build yourself a good performance. Find out your strengths and weaknesses and then focus. And that is where your number one phase of periodization should be starting, right there on your weakness. Turning that weakness into more of a strength. So.
Yep.
All right. Once again,
all right, Jeff,
thank you again for your time.
You bet, you, Stu. Anytime.
We'll see you.